Hey everybody, welcome back to the All In Podcast. I'm one of the co-hosts, Mike Badzik, joined like I am every episode by my co-host, Eli Cooper. What's going on, man?
Not much, man. Not much. How are you?
Going good. Episode 40. So 4-0, we are just grooving now, man.
We're reaching like Tom Brady status, right? Here. Yeah. How long we've been in the game.
I know, it's crazy, man. Like, we're like seasoned veterans now. Of the podcast game. So episode 40, and we have a lot to talk about because sports, we're kind of in sports euphoria right now with everything going on. Basketball is in the playoffs, you know, in the conference finals. Football now with week two just happening yesterday and today, the Monday night game. And also baseball, which, you know, I always have a little bit of love for baseball. It's in their final week of their regular season, counting down to their playoffs. Also, we had the U.S. Open in golf this weekend. So it was a jam-packed weekend of sports. I was doing major channel flipping. You know, I'm probably mostly was focused on the basketball and football, like a lot of people. And that's what we're going to talk about today. So we want to start with basketball and the Eastern Conference Finals. We saw Boston come back, and, you know, they're down 2-1 now. So, you know, we were wondering about the Heat taking a commanding 3-0 lead. They did not do that. Celtics had four guys score 20-plus points. Gordon Hayward made his return. Didn't really light up the box score or anything. He did play 30 minutes, but I think his just being there had an impact. So it's now 2-1. So, Coop, give us your thoughts on the series so far, and Celtics have a chance to come all the way back.
Yeah, absolutely. I think they take game four on Wednesday when these two teams meet again.
Yeah.
I was actually encouraged by the reports after game two where guys were going at it. You know what I mean? Like, that tells me, you know, from the Celtics locker room at least. Mm-hmm. And of course, Marcus Smart is, you know, the main guy mixed up in that, but he's their most vocal leader. You know, and he's kind of their Draymond in that sense. So, you know, I think those things are healthy, especially for a team who, you know, just got out of a battle with Toronto in a previous round. You can understand why they went down 2-0. And I think they needed a little bit of that, you know, as far as that intensity and getting their energy back. And it showed. They came out and won game three pretty handedly.
Yeah.
You know, and in that case. And if you really look at the first two games and you go back through these, game one, the Heat just, you know, made the bigger plays down the stretch with Jimmy's big shot and then eventually Bam's block at the rim. Game two, the Celtics were actually in control for most of that until about the third quarter when the Heat made their run and ended up coming back to win that game. So, you know, those are both winnable games for the Celtics. So there should be frustration when you blow two games that you feel like you should have won. And, you know, it didn't carry over to the third game as far as the frustration goes. It seems like they figured it out and won that game pretty handedly. So I think the momentum has shifted in this series. And I take the Celtics in game four, but I don't necessarily think that means they'll win the series. I mean, I had them in seven at first. You know, I'm going to stay with it just in case. But, you know, the Heat just seemed like the more composed veteran team in this case, which they are. You know, even though the Celtics might have a little bit more playing experience, you know, in these games, the Heat certainly have more veterans. They have Jay Crowder, Andre Iguodala, you know, obviously their leader and Jimmy Butler. Dragic has been around the block. You know what I mean? So they have multiple veterans that they can lean on for that. These young players that they have, like Bam and Harrow and Duncan Robinson, can all lean on, you know, for guidance. So, you know, I think this is going to be as good of a series as we thought it would be. I'm glad the Celtics got a game back. I certainly didn't want this to be like a four close game sweep like it was looking like it was going to be. So, yeah, I think they'll even it up, and then it'll be, you know, who wins two out of those last three.
Yeah, shaping up to be a really good series, which is what we expected coming into it. I think, you know, the fact that the Celtics had to go seven with the Raptors took a lot out of them. We saw it in the first two games. Like, they were the more tired, fatigued team. And I think we kind of looked at game three and said, if they can get game three, they're going to have a real shot. Because if they get game three, then they're going to have a couple days off. They're not playing again until, I think, Tuesday. I think they're playing. No, Wednesday. They're not playing again until Wednesday, right? So they're going to have like 3 days off here to regroup, which is huge, I think, especially for the Celtics. The Gordon Hayward thing, I think, does probably matter a little bit. You know, he didn't really do much in the box score, but you know, he knows what he's doing out there. He's better than Semi Ojeleye. You know, he's taken away from Brad Wanamaker's minutes. You know, just that alone is such a big boost for the bench of the Celtics. Goran Dragic had his worst game of the series, maybe his worst game of the playoffs, really, and he's been great so far. Don't know if that's going to continue. But I'm looking at the Celtics, and we kind of talked about this before. We talked about, you know, if Jason Tatum can be the best player in the series, the Celtics are probably going to win the series. I'm not sure he was until this game. This game, he was the best player on the court. Mm-hmm. He had the best plus minus. I think he had like 25, 14, and 8. So he was filling it up, doing everything. Like, and he's, you know, besides Marcus Smart, might be the best defender on the Celtics. So I am really liking the Celtics right now after game three. I think game four, I agree with you. I think they do get game four. But I'm going to stick with the Heat. So we're opposite on this one, and I'm going to keep it that way. I'm not flipping flopping in this series like I was doing with the Raptors. So I'll stick with the Heat. But this is going to be a great series.
Absolutely.
I think this is definitely going to be a better series than the Western Conference finals that we have seen so far.
Yeah.
Which is now 2-0. Sunday night, we saw Anthony Davis hit the game winner against the Nuggets. This was a good game. The last couple minutes were really good. So just give us your thoughts on the game and the winner, the game winner.
Yeah, I mean, you know, the biggest thing for the Nuggets after game one was getting back on defense. You would think the Nuggets, being the younger, more athletic team, I would think, at least on the wings, and even with their guards, would be the team that would be dominating in transition, but it was the Lakers. Mm-hmm. And, you know, obviously they had a lot more rest coming into that first game. You know, so that was kind of what contributed to the blowout in the first one, which I think most people would have expected after them coming back from 3-1. So game two was an opportunity for them to kind of, you know, reset, address things that they messed up on. But the Lakers came out again, doing a great job of getting out in transition.
Yeah.
And as soon as the Nuggets kind of did as soon as they started doing better, getting back on defense and cutting off those transition baskets, they started to chip back into the game. It was looking like it was going to get away from them a little bit there through the first half and even through the third quarter. Mm-hmm. And they just kept chipping away. They kept chipping away. They stayed in it. Jamal Murray started to hit some shots. Jokic started to get going.
Yep.
You know, eventually it ended up being a battle down the stretch, you know, between Jokic and AD, you know, making these clutch plays down the stretch. But throughout that entire game, you know, it was really just – LeBron pacing the Lakers offense in the first half. They really had no answer for him. And then throughout the second half, you know, AD finally stepped it up. And it's almost like he heard Charles Barkley in the TNT halftime thing and was just like, okay, you want to see the killer? Here's the killer. And I think there's a lot of talk, especially around AD after the Houston series, where like people don't feel like he's that dog that he should be. Or as dominant as he should be, you know, given that there's really no matchup for him in any of these series that they've played. None mm-hmm. of these teams have someone who can guard Anthony Davis. And I think people have expected him to be more dominant. Well, second half, we saw how dominant Anthony Davis can actually be, you know, and it wasn't just the game winner. Obviously, that's a huge shot. But like it was also, you know, down the stretch, they went to him pretty much every possession down for him, say, go get us a bucket. And him and Jokic were going at it, you know, back and forth until he hit that game winner. So that was good to see. And I think we need to see more of that from Anthony Davis. And if we do, this is going to be a sweep. So it's not looking good right now for the Nuggets. They just don't have anyone who can guard LeBron and Anthony Davis, or really either of them.
Right.
In that case. So if both of them can kind of get it together at the same time, you know, it's going to be difficult for the Nuggets to recover.
Yeah, it is going to be difficult. And, you know, when we talk about Anthony Davis, like, yeah, the Nuggets don't really have anybody for him. Not many people in the league have anybody for him. That's something we've been talking about.
Right.
Kind of is fun to watch this big man matchup here with Davis and Jokic, you know, down the stretch last night. You're right. Anthony Davis was the guy, and it was him and Jokic going back and forth. LeBron was just kind of, you know, really LeBron couldn't get out of the way there for a couple minutes. I thought he was going to blow it for him, actually, coming down the stretch.
Yeah.
And he started to defer to Davis. And then, on the, you know, Davis is the guy taking the last shot, as he probably should have been. So let's do this, Coop, because, you know, Coop had a busy week on Twitter. You did. You had really... I don't know if you guys follow Coop, but he had a very busy week on Twitter. He was first arguing with people about America and the politics of that, which is an entirely different podcast that we could probably do. And then he also was getting into the LeBron stands about why he shouldn't have won MVP. But Giannis was the MVP. We both agree. I don't really think that there's a strong case. Please tell us and tell everyone why this isn't really a debate.
Yeah, it's really not a debate. And, you know, LeBron was pretty upset that he only got 16 votes. I think you're lucky to have gotten 16 votes, if you ask me. And here's the reason why. It's not because on a year-in, year-out basis, LeBron isn't the most valuable player in the league. Like, that's obviously the case. We know that. But that doesn't mean he was the most valuable player of the 2019-2020 regular season. I don't know what it is about NBA Twitter just in general. Not even just LeBron fans, but like NBA Twitter in general does not seem to understand the concept that the MVP voting ends at the end of the regular season. And in this case, in this weird season that we had, it ended before they even got to the bubble. Yeah. Nothing in the bubble or that happened in the bubble was considered for MVP candidates. And really, neither Giannis or LeBron were good in those final regular season bubble games, so that didn't matter. Mm-hmm. LeBron has obviously been better in the playoffs, but again, none of that matters. And honestly, we knew Giannis was going to struggle in the playoffs. We saw it happen last year, so it wasn't a surprise. And it doesn't mean that he's not the MVP, though. The guy averaged 30 points, 14 rebounds, and 6 assists, all led his team. He was the defensive player of the year. Whether you agree with that or not, he was top two. Anthony Davis is the only person in the discussion. So he was 100 times better than LeBron defensively throughout an entire season. Offensively, he put up those numbers that I just read off in 30 minutes. Crazy. To give context to that. That is 2.5 quarters of basketball is what that is. It's 2.5 quarters. He averaged 30, 14, and 6 in 2.5 quarters. His team was the best record in the league. Traditionally, and on most occasions, the MVP award goes to best player on the best team. And in this case, it not only went to best player on best team, it went to someone who had a Wilt-like player efficiency rating.
Right.
Like, it wasn't even close. If he had played LeBron's minutes, I think LeBron was averaging, what, like 37, 38 minutes a game, something like that? So adjust his numbers to those minutes then. But they were blowing teams out in the regular season, so he didn't need to play 37 to 38 minutes. It was more ridiculous than what Curry did in 2016 as far as per minute statistics in that regards. And Curry won it unanimously in 2016, rightfully so. Mm-hmm. No one else even deserved a vote. But here's why LeBron specifically isn't the MVP. Here's other than just talking about how great Giannis was. Here's the other reason. LeBron led his team in one major stat category. One. And I granted he led them in plus minus. But now all of a sudden people care about plus minus. No one cared about plus minus when Steph Curry winning two MVP. No one cared about that. No one cared. And it's funny because, you know, we're kind of going in this circle where the narrative on who should win MVP changes, right? Like, we're saying, okay, well, now LeBron, you know, won the West. He had the best record in the West. So, yeah, his numbers weren't as good, but he's in a tougher conference. Well, is he? Is he? Is the West actually tougher? And from 6-8 seed or 6-12? Absolutely. Those teams are tougher.
Yeah.
If we look at the top 5 teams in the West, are they actually tougher? Clippers lost to the Nuggets. They didn't get out the second round. Would the Nuggets beat the Heat or the Celtics in a final series? I'm not 100% sure on that. I'm not 50%. I would say no. I would take the Celtics and the Heat in both of those series. Sure. I would take the Bucks against the Nuggets.
I'd take the Raptors.
I would take the Raptors. So are they really is the West really that tough? Don't get me wrong, like again, seed 6 on down, maybe right. 5 on down. No argument. But the top 4 seeds in the East to me were tougher than the top 4 teams in the West. From a balance standpoint. I think if the Bucks were in the West, they'd be in the Western Conference Finals right now.
Yeah, I think
maybe,
so too.
Unless they face the Clippers in the second round, maybe they don't get past the Clippers. But you know, I think they would beat Denver.
Mm-hmm.
So you know, it is what it is. And the other argument here is, you know, for LeBron has been, oh well, he's doing it in year 17. Doesn't matter. No one cares what season LeBron is playing in. I'm sorry. none of that.
Not for this, right?
Not for this award.
There's no handicap.
When it comes to his greatness, we're going to look back and say, dog, he dominated the league for 17, 18, 19 years, right? He was the best player in the league. And by the way, LeBron's still the best player on the planet. Like, that's not a debate or a discussion that we're having here. He's just not MVP of the 2020 regular season. A 2019-2020 regular season. That's all that's being said here.
Yeah.
Because if we look at precedent in this case, as far as MVP awards, let's go back to last year. Best player and best team, Giannis, winner of the MVP. Before that, couldn't give it to best player and best team because the Warriors had both Steph and KD. They were obviously penalized for being on the same team. So then you give it to James Harden, who had the best statistics on – you know, one of the next best teams in the West. He had ridiculous numbers. Then we got Russell Westbrook. Russell Westbrook broke precedent. He won it strictly because he averaged a triple-double. We later found out that didn't mean shit.
Yep.
So, you know, at the time, everybody thought it was incredible. We now know it means nothing.
Let me stop you right there then, actually, because then you talk about the guys who won because of the numbers. And right. I think normally we look at it and we say best player on best team makes the most sense. And this season, I think, Giannis, I don't really buy the LeBron argument. I think it's kind of, you know, more of a fan thing.
Right.
But let me ask you this then. So we looked at Westbrook and he had the triple-double. And then we said, well, this doesn't actually translate to winning in the playoffs. It doesn't really mean much. Next season, he averages a triple-double. He's not anywhere near the MVP.
Right.
Harden, you know, won it with the crazy statistics. Really had the same statistics last year and really this year, and he wasn't the MVP, really wasn't considered the MVP. So I think we do look at it maybe the next year and say those stats don't mean as much because we see that they don't really necessarily translate into plus. Let me ask you this, and I don't really have an answer for this. So, you know, looking at Giannis, they lose in the second round this year. And I'm sorry I didn't prepare you for this question. Looking at Giannis, they lost in the second round this year. Going into next year, if Giannis – and maybe assume LeBron doesn't lose to the Nuggets here. Assume he at least makes the finals. Right. If they have the exact same seasons next year, if Giannis averages the same numbers and LeBron averages the same numbers, and even if the Bucks are the one seed – does Giannis win it again, or do we look at it and say it didn't translate, therefore we're not going to give it to him?
If his record is better than the Lakers, he should win it. You set a precedent. Follow it. It's like I'm going to go there. It's like Republicans
not
allowing a Supreme Court justice in 2016 when Trump and Hillary ran. They would not allow the person Obama nominated to – to be elected or pushed into office until then. They're about to break precedent, which we all figured. But you know what I mean? It's if you set a precedent, stick by it, right? So now if the Lakers have the better record next year, I think you go to LeBron or AD, you know, depending on who's actually having the better season, you know, if the Lakers have the better record, then it should be one of those two. But, you know, and when we go back, so the only two times where best player on best team didn't win it was James Harden and Russell Westbrook, who had superior numbers. LeBron doesn't have superior numbers.
No.
So where's the argument coming from when we look at the precedent that's been set for the MVP award? It's either best player on best team, or if you can't do best player on best team, it's someone who had incredible numbers. That LeBron's not in that discussion. If anything, that would still be James Harden.
And Giannis is both. He also has insane numbers. And
Giannis has insane numbers. That's why it's really not an argument. He's the best player on the best team with insane numbers. That's an obvious choice for MVP of a regular season. And now the and again, you know, the argument again was, you know, LeBron in the tougher conference, you know, had the, even though he had worse numbers, he led them to the one seed and after missing the playoffs, blah, blah, blah. Okay, well, you also, these same people, and you're talking about that, bring up plus minus and things like that, they don't hold or they don't give Curry that same respect. You know what I mean? Especially for his first one in 2015.
This is what it all comes back to. Curry doesn't get his respect.
No, listen, it's true. He had worse numbers than James Harden, but he was best player on best team. So now, and in the Western Conference, well, yeah. James is in the West, but he was the best player on the best team in the Western Conference. You didn't make that argument for him then. Don't make it for LeBron now. Be consistent. You know what I mean? It's either you have your best player on best team or you have the numbers. In this case, right. Giannis had both. Debate is over.
Yeah, and you know, maybe me and you value – I hate to say this, but maybe me and you value winning more than other people where, you know, if you're on the best team, that matters. If you're on playoff teams, that's why I didn't have Brad Beal on any of my all NBA teams and was just so confused by Twitter losing their minds about Brad Beal, who had the third worst defensive numbers in the league this year ahead of only Trae Young and Colin Sexton. And they wanted him on the all NBA team. It's unbelievable. It's not going to happen. You know, Trae Young, you know, I didn't have him on my all-star team. I know he got in as a starter because of the fan vote. I don't know if he would have got in if he didn't get the fan vote. Like, you have to be on a winning team to get recognition. And when it comes to MVP, which is the highest recognition, most of the time, besides special circumstance, like you mentioned, you should be on the best team and be the best player on that team. So, yeah, I think Giannis for sure.
Yeah.
Okay, so let's wrap up our NBA talk then. Guys, we are going to take a quick break and then we're going to come back and talk about NFL. So if you're on YouTube, it's going to be a different video. Make sure you go click on that video and check that out for our NFL talk. If you are listening on audio, just hang on a second. Listen to this quick message from our sponsors.
Here at the All In Podcast, we love talking about sports. That's pretty much our main topic. And in sports, you need to be reliable. Well, what's more reliable than Tavon's Lawn Care LLC? It's a Black-owned family business in York, PA. Tavon's Lawn Care, or TLC for short, since they provide each job with tender love and care, has been in business for over 10 years. Founded by owner Tavon Parker, TLC aims to provide employment for underprivileged youth while providing great service at a reasonable rate. You can visit TavonsLawnCareLLC.com. or Tavon's Lawn Care on Facebook and Instagram to view their portfolio and request your cost-free quote now. So if you need any kind of lawn care or landscaping job, visit Tavon's Lawn Care for your landscaping needs.
Okay, we are back on the All In Podcast. I'm Mike Badzik, joined by my guy Eli Cooper. We are talking NFL. We just talked the conference finals in the NBA, so if you have not checked out that video, go check it out on our YouTube channel. But we do want to talk about the All In Network real quick, guys. Make sure you subscribe to the YouTube channel. You can find our podcast. Rain and Bliss just released a new episode. All In Politics is one of the best podcasts out right now that I listen to. They're super informative with the politics. So if you're into politics at all and you want to get a grasp on everything going on, make sure you're tuning into them. And you can find them on the YouTube channel as well as their feed. And then Beast Gaming also just released a new pod about esports and that everything in that realm. So if you're interested in that, make sure you check them out. If you go to allinnetwork.net, you can find links to all of those podcasts on their audio feeds, as well as see all the blog posts that we're doing and other people are doing for us. So make sure you check that out. And make sure you turn on the notification button on our YouTube channel so you know when we are going live and when we drop new content.
Yeah, and if you go to the website, you can also get a free 30-day trial to Amazon Prime. If you are a student, you can also get a free 6-month trial for Amazon Student. You can find that stuff on our website. We also have articles. We have a new blog writer named Mike Burton Moran, who had an excellent article about the correlation or should say lack thereof, of socialism and dictatorships, you know, and how the two do not have to coexist. It was an excellent read. Probably the best article as that I've seen on the website, and I am someone who has written quite a few. So I'm not being biased in any way, shape, or form. It was an excellent article. You can also find our merchandise there as well, for All In Network and Rain and Bliss. Their merch store is also available there on the website. It's getting cold outside. Grab you a hoodie. Both stores have some excellent merch. And last thing before we get into the NFL topics is, if you are an avid listener to this podcast, either on the audio or the video, make sure if you're watching the video, still download on the audio, even if you don't listen. Obviously, if you watch on YouTube, you don't have to listen, but make sure you hit that download button. If you listen on the audio, go ahead and check it out on the YouTube. We've got some excellent graphics and things like that that make the show really engaging to watch. Thank you guys for tuning in so far to episode 40.
Yes, and if you tune in on the YouTube channel, you get to see our beautiful faces as well. So that is an added bonus.
It's an added bonus.
If you haven't got to see our faces yet because you've been listening on audio, go check out the YouTube channel. Leave comments and all that. That goes a long way for us, so we appreciate it. Okay, let's talk NFL week 2. First thing we want to talk about, Sunday Night Football, Seahawks-Patriots. It was a great game. Felt like a playoff game. Russell Wilson and Cam Newton were dueling. It was awesome.
Is there anyone in America who deserves a raise after 2 weeks of work more than Cam Newton?
No. There is not. Okay. No, there is not. No.
the guy is on fire, man. And I saw it coming. I think you did too.
Yeah.
And your bold prediction from our very first NFL episode that before the season is looking very strong. Even though the Pats are sitting at 1-1, unfortunately they lost this game. Questionable call there at the goal line. I think that was just a little bit too predictable. Like, I know you're trying to get Cam Newton right on a QB power. That's a very reliable play, but I think you have to give him some kind of, you know, maybe quick tight end dump action to in case you know the linebackers commit too early, something like that. But the Seahawks were all over that and blew that play up.
Yeah.
But the Patriots look good with him behind center. Julian Edelman has not lost a step at all. He looked incredible last night.
Gained a few.
Yeah, exactly. So, you know, I think, I know the Bills are sitting at 2-0 right now. They played the two worst teams in the division and arguably the league. They are not going to have this division like, they might have thought when Tom Brady left. This Pats offense might actually be scarier with Cam Newton under center than it was under these last like couple of years under Brady, because he gives them an extra dynamic as a runner that they didn't have before. But last night we saw with the arm, we always see it with the legs, but last night we saw with the arm, which was the biggest question mark after week one, because he only had to throw 19 passes and only threw for 150 yards. And our question was, okay, well, when he has to throw more, how's that going to look? And we see it now. And teams especially in the AFC East, but just in the AFC in general, should fear the Pats. A healthy Cam Newton is scary.
Yeah, he threw 44 times, 400 yards. Like, I don't know if we thought we were, even if we thought that he was going to come back and be a solid quarterback and they were going to go 10-6 and 11-5 or whatever we thought was going to happen, I don't know if we ever thought that he was going to come out and throw for 400 yards in Seattle against Jamal Adams and that defense. So it was pretty special to watch. And Edelman, was fantastic. I just traded him to you in fantasy, so that's great. So he had a great week. And, the last play, I think you're right. It was too predictable. If anything, and I think I would rather him run to the right side, right? Because then you kind of keep the option to pass. And right. I was kind of expecting him to just dump a pass to like a third string tight end.
Right.
But if you go left, you don't really have any options. And I think everybody in the world knew exactly what was coming. Right. And it didn't work. And that was fine because I had the Seahawks -4.5. So it worked out perfectly for the gambling gods, helped us out there. So Seahawks -4.5 was a winner. So, yeah, but it was a great game. So let's talk about Seahawks then, too. Russell Wilson, they actually won the game. Maybe we should have talked about them.
Yeah.
Right. Russell Wilson was unbelievable. 5 touchdowns, 7 incompletions. Like, he is the MVP of the first 2 weeks of the season. Would you agree?
Yeah, by far, by far. And, you know, this is kind of what, you know, I thought might happen with Seattle this year is that they just unleash Russell Wilson, right? Yep. You know, they've always been a run first, you know, or run heavy team, you know, as far as their offensive approach. This year, it's like, all right, well, we're just going to put the team on Russ's back. And that's an excellent decision, if you ask me. And it's not really, it's not like the Seahawks can't run the ball. They still can do that.
Oh, yeah.
You know, Chris Carson is more than capable of carrying the load when they need him to. But I don't know. This offense is just incredibly explosive with Lockett and DK Metcalf, you know, out wide and obviously Russ under center. I think the Seahawks team is dangerous. They're certainly a contender here after 2 weeks, and Russell Wilson is also in the MVP discussion, and like you said, probably the front runner.
Yeah, he is my favorite player in football right now. He's just so fun to watch. I would never bet against that guy. You know, and they had that third and one at the end there, and they threw it deep to Lockett. I didn't really like that, but you know, five touchdowns to five different guys too. He's spreading it around like. I think he's just really good, and he's a leader, and they unleashed him, and I think that's what they should have been doing for the last 2 years probably, but they didn't. Yeah. So, you know, we're going to do now contenders versus pretenders. We're talking about the 2-0 teams, which one of them are for real, which one maybe not. We're not even going to talk about the Seahawks, right, because they are definitely a contender. Yeah. So let's start with the Patriots, biggest rival in the AFC East, the Bills, who have beaten the Dolphins and the Jets in back-to-back weeks. Are they a contender or a pretender, Eli?
I think they're pretenders. I picked them to win the division, so this says a lot. And they might very well still win it. We'll see how their showdown with the Pats goes. But as far as a title contender, I don't think they're quite there yet. Mm-hmm. Josh Allen does look good.
Yes.
But like we, you know, said, they've played two awful teams to start the season. So right now I'm not ready to throw them in the contender boat. We need to see them against some tougher competition before we really make that evaluation. So I'm going to say pretender for now.
Yeah. I'm probably going to say, I don't know for right now, but if I had to rate it off of these 2 weeks, I guess I have to say contender because of how good they looked and how good Josh Allen looked. I don't think that they are a Super Bowl contending team. If that's what we mean by contender, I will not call them that kind of a contender. So maybe they are a pretender. I think this is the week where we maybe find out more, right? They play the Rams this week, who are a team that we're probably going to talk about in this same segment here as a contender or pretender. But we're going to find out a lot about Josh Allen. You know, can he score on a really good defense? Can he throw the ball the way he has been in the first 2 weeks, which has been really impressive? And we know what the defense is there in Buffalo. I think it's going to be a really good battle for the AFC East between the Pats and the Bills. So I guess I'll call him a pretender then if we're saying championship contender. Okay, next team. We're going to talk to the AFC North. 2-0 teams. I think both of these teams were pretty safe calling contenders. Definitely the Ravens, I think, just based on everything we know about them. But who do you like more, I guess, the Ravens or the Steelers?
Right. I'm going to say the Ravens right now, just simply because we know what we're going to get from them.
Yeah.
Their offense, you know, still looks explosive, especially with the addition of Dobbins back there. Still have some concerns about the passing game as far as outside the numbers goes and things like that. And, you know, outside of Mark Andrews, like who can Lamar Jackson rely on to be kind of his go-to target is really going to be the biggest question mark for them. The Steelers, I still need to see their offense, one, stay healthy. That's honestly the biggest thing that scares me about them. And it's not even really like James Conner, who when he's healthy, he's really good. But, you know, Benny Snell is more than capable of picking up the workload when Conner is out. So I'm not too concerned about the running back situation. It's really just keeping Big Ben healthy. They got off to a little bit of a slow start in week two, but then some young receivers for the Steelers made some big plays. Chester Claypool, I think.
Chase
Claypool, rookie. Chase Claypool, yeah. Mm-hmm. You know, had a big catch out there. And then Deontay Johnson, who I really like coming into the season. I didn't get enough of him in fantasy as far as the eight teams that I'm on. But he had a nice 28-yard touchdown. And Steelers ended up sealing the deal. So they have a multitude of weapons. Juju, somehow the Steelers always seem to have two wide receivers, you know, who are, you know, capable of being the go-to guy on any given game. We know that Juju has, you know, obviously can be that, but now Deontay Johnson seems to be kind of, you know, a guy who, all right, well, you can focus on Juju. Then I'll burn you. So it's pick your poison kind of thing on both sides. The Steelers always seem to have that. And Big Ben looks good, which is the most important thing. So I do have the Steelers as contenders, especially with that defense. That defense carried them last year, and now that they have an offense that can support them, I think the Steelers are scary. And I think they're up there with the Ravens as far as, you know, as long as they can stay healthy, I think they're up there with the Ravens.
Yeah, I think they're definitely both contenders. I think if you ask me who the three best teams in the AFC are, I think it's the Chiefs one, and then there's a small gap, and then Ravens and Steelers are both right there. Yeah, in the 2-3 spot. I think they're the second and third best teams. I think they're both playoff teams. You know, this kind of, I don't like to say this, but I think I'm probably more in on the Ravens right now. If you're asking me who I think is going to win this division, I know I picked the Steelers, but just looking at these first two games and this Ravens offense, they haven't missed a beat. And I don't know if it's going to translate to playoff wins this year for Lamar Jackson. I mean, that's the big question mark. He doesn't really have anything left to prove in the regular season. Now, we're not even – like, really, he's going to fly through this regular season. I don't think that we're going to sing any more praises for him than we already have, right? Like, we're not going to say, like, oh, my gosh, Lamar Jackson, like, where is this? Like, no, we know what Lamar Jackson's capable of in the regular season. Now, is he going to take the step in the postseason? That'll be the big question, but – you know, they could potentially, you know, go 13-3, 14-2 here. They haven't been trailing in a regular season game in about 12 or 13 of them. I think I saw a stat. So, you know, I think I'm probably right now leaning Ravens to have a better regular season record. But the Steelers, like you said, and you know, it's always an emotional roller coaster with the Steelers. You know, they kind of let Denver hang around, and Drew Lock got hurt, and it was Jeff Driscoll back there, and, you know, you're kind of thinking, like, wow, Jeff Driscoll probably shouldn't be able to score, you know, more than 9 points against this defense, this stellar defense we have, and we were putting pressure on him, but he actually did a nice job, and they hung around, and we probably should have put it away sooner than we did, but they actually had a chance to win the game there, and it took a last drive stop by the defense to ultimately win the game. And you know, the Steelers and Mike Tomlin have always kind of, you know, his entire tenure, especially the last 4 or 5 years, have always, you know, not including last year, have always kind of played down to teams and played up to teams. They do that. Ben does that himself. So it'll be an interesting matchup. And you know, this is really their first real test this week. They had the Giants in week one, Denver in week two. Now they get Houston, you know, in week three. Houston, who is desperate for a win after the Ravens beat up on them, you know, and the Houston, you know, they're 0-2, but they play the Chiefs and the Ravens, so we really don't know what they're about. Maybe we'll talk about them later. So this will be a test for the Steelers as well to see, okay, what's the litmus? Where are we at with them? But I think as of right now, I think, you know, you kind of have to lean Ravens. They've been that dominant.
Yeah.
Okay, next team we'll get to is the Tennessee Titans. They barely escaped. They almost were the second victim of the year to Minshew Mania. but they were able to get out of there with the win. They're 2-0. Are we in on the Titans?
So I'm not in on the Titans. You know, and not because I don't think they're a good team. Mm-hmm. I do. And Tannehill actually looks pretty good. You know, the question was last year a fluke, or is he actually this good? And I think, you know, he's finally found a home. He looks comfortable, and that's all great for him. But if we're talking about true contenders, we've already kind of listed three teams, right, that we know are going to be contenders in the AFC West. Well, everyone can't be a contender. So I think and honestly, I think the Pats could put themselves in that contender conversation, depending on, you know, how well they keep their play going. And I honestly, I would take them over the Titans right now with the way Cam Newton's playing. So, you know, I think the Titans are solid, certainly a playoff team, probably win that division. But I don't think they're true Super Bowl contenders.
I agree. Not Super Bowl contenders, not with Ryan Tannehill. I don't know if there ever are with Ryan Tannehill, unless, you know, yeah. he takes another leap separate from the leap he took last year, but he has looked good. And I think that, you know, they're going to give whoever they play a tough game. There will certainly be a tough out just with what they can do in the running game and with the defense.
Yeah.
But yeah, I just can't see them being like in the AFC championship game again this year.
Right.
You know, last year, like they beat Baltimore and they were in the AFC, they beat the Pats and then they beat Baltimore. And, you know, it's kind of like, wow, this is the Tennessee Titans are really in the AFC championship game. How did this happen?
Right.
And I don't think that we see that again. Right. Yeah. So, I'll go pretender for the Titans, but I do think that they're probably going to win that division because the Colts have not. You know, the Colts look really good this week, so maybe the Colts are on the bounce back and they'll be right there. I'm sure they will be there at the end, but right now Tennessee's got the hold on it. So, all right, let's take it to the NFC. There are no undefeated teams in your precious NFC East. No surprise there. NFC North, though, there are two of them. The Packers, which is probably, you know, if I said two teams in the NFC North are going to be considered contenders, probably I would say the Packers and I wouldn't say the Bears, but the Packers and Bears are here. So between these two teams, do we have a contender? Do we have a pretender?
I do think the Packers are contenders. I had them winning this division beforehand, and I think they finally found the balance of you know, Aaron Rodgers being great and Aaron Jones being great. You know, I think they found that balance offensively, but the fact that they can run the football the way that they do, and that they still have a Hall of Fame quarterback that they can rely on. Now the Devontae Adams injury, I don't think is going to linger on too long, but if it does, we could be having a different conversation. You know, cause, Rodgers relies heavily on him.
Oh, yeah.
So, you know, we could be having a different conversation there. But I do think the Packers are legitimate contenders, especially in an NFC that doesn't seem to be super tough. A lot of the teams that we thought were going to be good have not panned out so well, especially out in the West, which we'll get to. But, yeah, I think the Packers are legit. Any team that can run the football like they do can beat anybody.
Yeah, it's definitely the Packers are contenders for me as well for all the same reasons. But I was talking about the Bears. I think the Bears are pretenders big time.
Yeah, yeah.
Trubisky, I don't think, is actually good. They almost lost to the Giants last week. They definitely should have lost in week one to Detroit. So probably I'm out on the Bears, in on the Packers, same as you.
Agreed.
All right, so we're not going to talk about the Saints. They play tonight on Monday Night Football. We don't know if they're going to be 2-0. I think that they're contenders. Even if they lose, we're both going to say that they're contenders.
I agree.
So let's go to the NFC West. There's actually three 2-0 teams in the NFC West. This one's probably the biggest surprise of the three, I'd say. Maybe not. I think a lot of teams, people were hot on them, especially Kyler Murray.
Yeah.
But the Cardinals 2-0. Pretender or contender?
I'm gonna throw them in the pretender, in the pretender rank for now. However, my bold prediction of Kyler Murray getting 5,000 yards, in total this year is looking pretty good. You know, so we'll see how that pans out. And obviously, D-Hop was a huge addition to this offense, which looks lethal now.
Yeah.
And I think they're absolutely a playoff contender. I think that's safe to say. But when it comes down to it, I still think the Rams, Seahawks, you know, I think the Packers are better than them. I think the Saints are better than them. So, you know, I think they have a tough way to go, but I would not be shocked if they made the playoffs. I wouldn't even be shocked if they won the division.
Wow. Yeah, I wouldn't be shocked either, actually. So, but I do think that they are, you know, quote unquote pretenders here. They have a good chance to make the playoffs. They are very solid. Kyler Murray is really, really good at football. And yes, I think we all knew he was going to be, especially coming into this year, all the praises he was getting. You know, he's been great. You know, they beat the Washington football team. I don't know what that means. I mean, the Washington football team beat up on your guys. so maybe they're good. They certainly have a good defensive line anyway.
Yeah.
Right. So, you know, I can't see the Cardinals, you know, making this run and Kyler Murray being this guy in his second year in the league and taking them to the NFC Championship game, anything like that. So I'll call him a pretender that way. Right. But, yeah, I love this Cardinals team. They are so fun to watch. You know, just, you know, if you had to pick a team to watch, they're probably one of the two or three top teams you'd pick.
Yeah, and I would say that we have a different conversation about this Cardinals team next year or the following year about them being true championship contenders, because they actually have a lot of playmakers on that defense, which is pretty solid. Yeah, Buda Baker. We talked about Isaiah Simmons, the rookie they drafted this year, who has incredibly high upside. Chandler Jones. They got some talent on that defense, man. So, and I can't believe I didn't say Patrick Peterson is still there. So, you know,
yeah,
that's so, pretty solid.
Yeah, that's very solid. So we're both kind of, we like the Cardinals future stock, maybe not quite this year. So keep it in the NFC West. The next one we're doing is the Seahawks. We sort of talked about them already. I definitely have them as a contender. Any quarrels there?
No, contender.
Okay, contender it is. Let's do the Rams then. So the Rams, I was very high on the Rams coming into this year. I actually picked them. I think I picked them to win this division, or at least be a playoff team. I know that. They've been really good. Beat your Eagles. And week one, I'm sorry, they beat the Cowboys. So they're just running through the NFC East right now. Maybe they're actually not that good. The NFC East is just really bad. Are you in or out on the Rams? I'm in. I have them as contender. I think they could actually win the Super Bowl, let alone the NFC. I'm not saying they will. I'm just saying they could.
Right. I'm going to say they're pretenders. And for that reason that you just mentioned, I think right now they played two NFC East teams, and the NFC East is not good, including my Eagles. Things are much worse in Philly than I thought. And then, you know, the Cowboys squeaked away with a – they shouldn't have beat the Falcons, but the Falcons are as dysfunctional as – both the Cowboys and the Eagles combined. So, you know, the Cowboys technically should be sitting at 0-2. So they really would, they would have two wins over two teams that should be 0-2. I'm not a believer yet. Fair. You know, and the Bills will be a good test for them, and they'll be a good test for the Bills. But I'm not a believer yet, especially since, you know, you're looking at Seahawks, Saints.
Yeah.
And Packers that are still in the NFC alone, you know, so I'm not quite a believer that they're a contender just yet.
Okay, that's fair. So let's talk about the Cowboys then. Probably the game of Sunday, I would say. Maybe the, you know, maybe it's the Seahawks Patriots like we talked about. But this Cowboys game against the Falcons, there was no defense to be found. Cowboys made an unbelievable comeback and, you know, capped it off with the worst onside kick recovery attempt by the Falcons I think we've ever seen in NFL history. And then Legatron, Greg Zuerlein, hits the game-winning field goal, and the Cowboys win in front of fans at AT&T Stadium. So what were your thoughts on this game?
It's just like, one, the onside recovery I still wrap my mind around. It makes no sense to me how that happened, what was going through anyone's mind there. So it's baffling to me. And you got to feel for this Atlanta offense and Matt Ryan, because like Matt Ryan gets like the bulk of all the blame, right? That is wrong with the Falcons
every year.
And every year. And he put up 39 points yesterday and he was incredible. 24-36, 273 yards, 4 touchdowns. Calvin Ridley might be better than Julio Jones. He's been that good so far through these first two seasons. There's a strong argument that Calvin Ridley is now the number one receiver in this offense. You know, Gurley was pedestrian. And maybe that's their issue, is that they can't really run the ball effectively and to close games out. I don't know. But to me, like, I don't really even want to give the Cowboys credit here, because I don't think they deserve it. The Falcons defense is atrocious. So the fact that you were behind by so much anyway, really doesn't make any sense. If you ask me, but, and maybe that's the Eagle fan in me just hating on the Cowboys, but, you know, nonetheless, an incredible comeback for them. I think they had a 2% chance at winning with 7.5 minutes left, which is ridiculous. You know, but I don't know. It's just something about the Cowboys. Like, they put up these ridiculous numbers, you know, like Dak Prescott throws for over 400 yards, but only one touchdown. And he did run for three, but like, there's just something about that. That's just like, why was this even a game? Why was this close? Why did you have to come back from down 20? And then why are the Falcons the way that they are is the other question that just goes through my mind after this game.
Well, maybe because of Dan Quinn. And, you know, when we talk about coaches and, you know, who's going to be the first coach fired midseason, or if there's going to be one, like, I think Dan Quinn might be approaching that level. We've been talking about that, you know, with him probably the last two seasons. And is he going to end up getting fired? Well, like, they, you know, totally blew this. And the onside kick thing, I think, you know, Dan Quinn, maybe he gets some of the blame for that. I also think that, you know, if they are professional football players on the field, they probably should know that they're allowed to touch the ball before it goes 10 yards. If they're on the receiving team, I think that's pretty basic, right? I didn't play football past midget football. I think I knew that. So maybe they should have known that. Maybe some blame is on them. But at the same time, you could make the argument. You could say, okay, well, you know, is there any scenario where you could ever see a Patriots team doing that? Of course not. You can never see that, right? Like, so maybe something, maybe it does fall on Dan Quinn, and maybe we're saying it is part of Dan Quinn's fault. But, you know, they lost this game. They should have won this game. Now they're 0-2. I think the Cowboys, like, I don't like the Cowboys. You know, and you're an Eagle fan, and I'm a Steeler fan, so we share this common sports hatred for the Cowboys. Yeah. This is one of the few things we share in. You know, they should have lost. Their defense is bad. You know, the Falcons' offense is good, but that Cowboys' defense is so bad. Yeah. And really, the offensive line is not that great either. Dak Prescott, yes, he ran for 3 touchdowns. I don't know if that's something he's trying to do every week. So you wonder what's sustainable out of this game for that Cowboys' offense. But they moved the ball well. They didn't quit. There's something to be said about that, I guess. Mike McCarthy was about to join Dan Quinn on that hot seat. If they probably would have lost this one, he would have been after 2 games, people talking about it already, because that's just how it goes when you're the coach of the Cowboys. But, you know, he's won the game now, so nobody cares. So, screw the Cowboys. But they're 1-1. The Falcons are 0-2. So our next topic is going to be 0-2 teams that we think are not quite out of it. So some of them we just kind of agreed before the show we're not even going to talk about. So the Jets, the Dolphins, the Bengals, anybody else? Denver, because Drew Lock is hurt, so we left them out. The Giants, you know, without Saquon for the rest of the year, it's going to be tough for them. And Carolina, just, you know, their defense is so bad. And Teddy Bridgewater, you would just wonder what, you know, he's not the quarterback to lead a high scoring offense to overcome a defense. He's more of a game manager type. So we didn't include them yet.
McCaffrey's out.
So, So we didn't include them either. But the teams we did include are on the YouTube screen right now. Eagles, Vikings, Texans, Falcons, Lions. So which of these teams are actually, you think, better than the record says?
To me.
Don't say the Eagles.
Yeah, no, I'm not going to say that. I think they're as bad as their record shows. They might be worse. To me, I think it's the Texans. I think they got like the two best teams in the AFC off the bat, to start this year. And really when you look at this group, I think they have the best quarterback. Matt Ryan has an argument there. But I think Deshaun Watson is the best quarterback of this group. And the other, and the biggest thing is they're in other than the Eagles, they're in the easiest division. You know, as far as digging themselves out of a hole, you know, in this case, the Vikings and Lions have the Packers, who, you know, like what we talked about earlier, you know, still in their division. The Falcons are in the toughest division, probably in the, well, maybe NFC West, but in one of the toughest divisions in the league in the NFC South. So it's going to be hard for them to, their defense is so bad. It's going to be hard to get themselves out of there. But I don't think the Texans are as bad as they looked against the Ravens. I think I don't think they really had a chance against the Ravens because they're that good. But they did put up a fight against the Chiefs. You know, so those are two obvious Super Bowl contenders. So if there's any of these 0-2 teams that I think can get out of this hole and make the playoffs, I think it's the Texans and Deshaun Watson.
Yeah, so I think if – you know, there's kind of two different questions going on here as well. There's also like, okay, which of these 0-2 teams have the best chances of coming back and making the playoffs? And then which of these 0-2 teams is actually the best team? Because I think if we looked at the Falcons, we might say, you know, maybe they are one of the best teams in this group of teams.
Certainly the best offense.
Certainly the best offense. But because of the division, I don't know how, you know, what's the path for them. Certainly they're not, probably not going to win the division at this right. point. You know, can they carve out a path, expanded playoffs this year? So maybe they have a better chance. I think the Eagles have a good chance to still win this division. It's that bad.
That's true.
You know, I think 8-8 and or maybe 9-7 is going to win the NFC East. And I think the Eagles can do that. Something's going on with them. Actually, I do want to talk about them for a second after this. The Vikings, I actually still like the Vikings. I picked the Vikings to win the NFC North. I don't know if that's going to happen now. But yeah. I do look at this too, and I say, okay, 0-2 teams, what do I think is important to coming out of a hole like that? And I think coaching is probably one of the most important things. I think Mike Zimmer is the best coach on this list. You know, obviously, Peterson won a Super Bowl, so he – gets props, so maybe it's him. But Mike Zimmer, I think, is, you know, just a guy who can lead them out of it. And Kirk Cousins has been really, really bad. Really, really bad. So maybe it's not his year, and you know, so they're done. But they've got stars on defense. They still have Dalvin Cook, and they have Mike Zimmer. So I think the Vikings are maybe the better team. And then, of course, I agree with you about the Texans as well. With Deshaun Watson, like, you just look at it and you say, okay, that's probably the other thing you look at, right? You say, okay, who has the best coach? Who has the best quarterback? So that's why I would say Vikings and Texans. And then if you said who's got the best chance to still make the playoffs, I think you have to put the Eagles on there just because of the division they play. Let's talk Eagles for our Central PA, Eastern PA audience. That's a lot of you guys.
Right.
Go ahead, talk about your Eagles.
You know, it's hard at this point because I really don't even know what to say in regards to this team. You know, we got Lane Johnson back. I thought that, and Miles Sanders back. I thought that would help. DeSean Jackson was actually healthy for this game and played it in full. But, you know, I think it's finally, and I've been in denial about it, but I think it's finally time to take a good hard look at, you know, whether Carson Wentz is the guy or not. And it's awful timing to do so because you just gave him an extension, a big one. But you know, there was a point in this game. And I forget what the score was, but where the Eagles had clawed their way back into striking distance. And they're in the red zone and Carson Wentz flat out missed Dallas Goedert on a little seam route in the red zone, should have been a touchdown, and he just never saw him. And didn't even, you know, he ended up getting pressured and throwing the ball away. And I think that's his biggest problem, is like he holds the ball forever. And I'm not sure that he necessarily knows where he's going to go with the ball pre-snap. You know, so I think it's time to take a good hard look at Carson Wentz now. I've been a Carson Wentz apologist for the longest. It was hard for me to say these words here on this podcast, simply because, like, you really look at it, like, the one time he was healthy, he had a actually good receiving core. He was about to win, and he was going to win MVP. Yep. It was almost written in stone before he took that hit in the end zone. After that, we saw him, you know, not fully healthy. His receivers weren't fully healthy. Last year, his receivers weren't healthy. He was throwing to practice squad receivers towards the end of the season and still threw for 4,000 yards. Like, his numbers were still comparable to Deshaun Watson's, you know, last year, with his best receiver being Greg Ward. So a former quarterback. So, you know, I was kind of like, all right, well, let's see what happens when he gets his guys back. You know what I mean? And granted, he doesn't have Alshon, and maybe that matters, just from a, you know, having a veteran receiver out there. But you got DeSean Jackson, you got the new first round rookie Jalen Reagor. Ertz is healthy, Goddard's healthy, Miles Sanders is back in the lineup, and you put up 242 yards and two picks, no touchdowns. You know, it's just and he threw two picks in week one against Washington, who granted has a good defense, and they've played two good defensive front sevens. Yep. But like, the Rams didn't sack him yesterday. So your offensive line held up. That didn't seem to be the problem. They didn't create an incredible amount of pressure on him. So what's the issue? What's the problem? You know, now what's the excuse for Carson Wentz? I can't find one. They ran the ball well, so it's not that they don't have a running game. Miles Sanders looked really good.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so I don't know what it is. Eagles need to figure it out somehow. Oh, and the defense is the linebacking crew is awful. They're god awful. And Tyler Higbee exposed that, but yeah. You know, we'll see, you know, what happens going forward, but I said I didn't have much to say about this, but it turns out I did.
Oh, so. I knew you did. That's why I asked. yeah, the Wentz thing is tough. So I don't really have many more thoughts on the Eagles besides that. But what does the record need to be at week 8 for us to get a Jalen Hurts start?
2-6.
2-6 is okay. So 3-6. Okay, so 3-5. You're sticking with Wentz. 4-4.
Yeah, because
you're still in it, right?
Especially in the NFC East, you're probably in second place at 3-5. So
yeah,
maybe first. But so you know, I don't think you can quite hand it over to a rookie if it's 3-5.
Yeah.
Depending on the schedule, I don't have their schedule in front of me. So I think 2-6, you're kind of like, all right, well, Wentz probably isn't the guy, and I don't know what you do if he's not the guy after giving him that extension, but you certainly have to take a look at Hurts.
Yeah.
At that point.
Yeah. Rough times for Eagles fans. It'll get better. Don't worry. They'll figure something out. Peterson. Oh, I know he's hurting right now, guys. Leave a comment. Tell Eli you're praying for him. It's rough for him out here. So that is all we got for this episode of the All In Podcast. Coop, any last thoughts?
Yeah, thank you guys again for tuning in. We appreciate you guys supporting the pod. 40 episodes in so far. So thank you for those who've listened on a consistent basis. If you're new, thank you for joining us so far. You know, so it's been a pretty crazy ride so far as far as the podcast goes. But if you're listening right now, make sure you tune in. Make sure you follow us on social media at @all_in_pod on Twitter. You can see that if you're watching on YouTube at the bottom here. Instagram, All In Network, all one word. Same thing on Facebook. It's All In Network. You can find us there and get, you know, every Sunday we're going to be doing a NFL pick'em thread. So on Twitter. So make sure you follow us there and go vote in the, you know, polls that we run through there. So, and also you get updates on our shows, Rain and Bliss, Beast Gaming, All In Politics, all that good stuff. You'll get posts and updates there as well.
Yes. 40 episodes in, it's been really fun so far, and we're going to keep on going with this. We don't have any plans of stopping anytime soon. So we're going to keep going. Make sure you guys are subscribed to the YouTube channel. Hit the notification button so you know when we go live, because we're going to be going live a lot more nowadays. And follow us on all of the audio feeds that you have, whatever you listen to, Apple, Spotify, Google Podcasts, Anchor, wherever you listen to podcasts, we are there. So find us. And if you can't find us, go to allinnetwork.net and we'll have all the links available right there. So, all right, that is all we got. Episode 40, All In Podcast. Thanks for listening, guys.
See you guys on Thursday.